If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Having a child, becoming a parent, is a momentous occasion in any life. It's often full of joy, love, stress, fear, and so many other feelings. Becoming a parent or caring for a small child in a pandemic brings with it a whole new set of stressors and fears and dangers. Later this hour, I'll talk with a certified nurse midwife who cares for pregnant women and is pregnant herself. I'll also talk with a young mom who's working to provide support to Black mothers and Black families in Des Moines. But first, Brooke Freund is a junior high teacher who lives in Iowa City. She gave birth in April of 2020 and has been dealing with the pandemic as a mother of an infant and as a teacher who teaches face-to-face. I spoke with her last Friday during a break at school. Brooke, you were very pregnant. You were 8 months pregnant when the pandemic really struck in Iowa. What was going through your mind?
Well, so much and also nothing. All the time. I feel like I had, we were like a week away from dress rehearsals for the junior high play that we were doing last year, which already seems like a million years ago. But I was teaching during the day, so I was already pretty exhausted, but I definitely submitted to chair teaching by that point. And we were doing the play. And so essentially, what was going through my mind at that time was just trying to figure out maternity leave. I mean, I was just, there's between conveying like all of my plans to the person who was going to be my awesome long-term sub for the rest of the year, I was also just trying to feel like I was trying to alleviate stress. I was really working towards that goal, trying to be mindful of like my body and brain and everything going on. And so that was where I was at right before, you know, that Friday we packed up for spring break, as I was just looking forward to a week of, just taking it easy on myself.
Right.
Yeah.
You did get to do some of the things that people want to do when they're pregnant. You did get to have baby showers and things like that. But then for those last few weeks, I mean, a big part of that was isolation. That's a time when you might want to be spending time with family and with friends. But what did that feel like? Did you feel very alone?
It makes me emotional just thinking about it. I did. I mean, my family is really close. Both me and Max, my husband, our families are all very, very, very socially compatible people and all very good at communicating, and I feel like if they weren't able to be with me in person that last month leading up to stuff, they were definitely very, very cognizant of needing to, like, phone-wise check in with me. But yes, I felt so isolated. Other than Max, my husband, who is amazing, yes, I felt so isolated because I think when you're at least sort of metacognizant of other people's social situations and how things go, you don't want to vent all the time. You don't want to make your burden someone else's burden. You don't want to assume that, oh, I need to call this person or I need to like vent or I need, you know, all these people in my life because, you know, everyone's going through the same thing. So I think sometimes that isolation is a little self-imposed, you know, because I'm afraid to ask for help sometimes. Yeah. And especially at the beginning of what felt like the beginning of it for most Americans, you know, in March with the first kind of, you know, stay-at-home order and the quarantine, it just felt, maybe for like 2 days, it felt cozy and fun, like a snow day. And then after that, it was just horrendous. I just needed a lot of checking in with myself. And I really had to build up my toolbox of tactics too. Oh,
and that's an emotional time anyway, those last few weeks of pregnancy.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking back to, you live in Iowa City, so thinking back to March in Iowa City, we also didn't know other people who had COVID or who were suffering right. from COVID at that time. So we were in lockdown. Right. We had this idea that it may not last that long. But so at that point, was there a lot of fear for you of the virus?
You know, yes, I would say my greater fear, like my ultimate fear, was that Max wasn't going to be able to be with me when I gave birth. Mm. I mean, that was like the
most. A lot of women went through that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very real. And it was very, it was so strange. My last three or four, you know, check-in gyno appointments before giving birth to, because every doctor had a different kind of strategy with how to alleviate your fear. And a lot of the, what I experienced, which I appreciate in hindsight, but was kind of like, we don't talk about it. Like, don't talk about the fear. If you have questions, like, it's okay, but like they just, I think they didn't want to like fan the fear by talking about it too much. I honestly didn't fear getting the virus because I was just not even leaving my living room. So, I mean, I don't think I feared that so much as I just feared being alone and completely having my vision of having a child and everything completely uprooted. I was really, I think, angry more than fearful.
Yeah. Max was able to be with you when you gave birth.
Yes.
And what was that experience like? I mean, being in the hospital under all of the COVID restrictions?
Yeah. Well, my story, and I will not tell the whole one, but I had a very, very, very quick 0 to 10, literally. So I was like sent home from the hospital, and then I had the plan in my mind, you know, epidural, get there, you know, all the stuff. And I labored to 10 at home without really know. I mean, I knew I was, but I didn't really understand the directions I was being given. I don't want to blame anyone. I just think that it wasn't very explicit when they sent me home what I should know to in order to come back to the hospital. So I almost had a car baby. So when I got to the hospital with Max, I mean, we didn't even have our coats off and I had my mask on, and then it was go time. So the whole experience was super strange, but like as a first-time mother, I have nothing to compare it to. It was all just the biggest day of my life other than my wedding day. It was just puts everything else pretty low on the stress level bar.
Yeah. Well, so that was April 22nd. You had a beautiful baby girl named Foster.
Yes.
And she is healthy.
Yes.
She's now 9 months old.
In
those first weeks, though, of course, again, that's a time when family comes together, when people come and they want to meet the baby or they want to help you do your dishes while you nurse the baby. This is a time when family and friends are supposed to be there.
Yeah.
What was that like in a pandemic?
Getting emotional again. Well, it was as good as it could have been. And I have four parents. Both my parents are remarried to awesome people. I have many siblings of all who were married. And I had, you know, different couples visit. And they were all very respectful of what we wanted with masks. I remember that my dad and stepmom visited the first Saturday we came home, and my mom and my stepdad visited the next day. And it was pretty impossible for me not to have my parents hold the baby. And I just kind of said, this is what it is. And they wore face shields. They washed hands. They did, you know, everything. And everyone was pretty amazing with doing what they could do, but also being receptive. And I think over time, I mean, honestly, now I have a lot more comfortability. Some people are obviously more cautious than others about entering our home and wearing masks and stuff, because my husband and I will both, as of tonight, be vaccinated, and then I'll go back for my other one. But long story short, they are very assertive people, so they've helped me a lot, but it's just been really difficult navigating everyone's comfortability with being around other people. So I've had to really step up with advocating for what I want, and I'm not really used to that in my family. So,
Well, and you have had cases of COVID in your family.
I have. And I mean, I don't want to disclose any more for But I mean, I've known people. I mean, I have. It's so crazy, like what you were saying about people at the very beginning. It felt so far away, and I've had. I mean, I have students with it. I have colleagues. I have friends. I have people I know that have passed away. I've had lots of people in my life with it. So it's very real. Yeah.
Through the summer, of course, we saw the pandemic picking up strength. You are a teacher. You teach seventh graders and eighth graders as well. But so you knew that at the end of the summer, school would start again in some way. That is a really difficult time for pretty much any working mom to need to transition from maternity leave back into work. But also with COVID, that specter was there. What was that like for you to think about going back to work and needing to send Foster to childcare?
Well, the childcare part is like so separate from the teacher part. Well, not separate, but it's like its own category of talking about. It felt awful. I was terrible. I'm still terrible at it. The first day I dropped Foster off, my husband rode with me, and then he decided after looking at my body language and my not being able to keep it together, he needed to stay home with me that first day. And it was full of a lot of the worst feelings in the whole world. So conflicting and so opposite of what I wanted to feel. And that has mellowed out over time, as most working mothers have told me it would mellow out over time. And the going back to work part, it's very difficult to go from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. full of joy. It's very, very, very difficult to absorb the amount of negative energy that I absorb on a daily basis. It's just, if you're impressionable, which I really feel like most teachers are, and an empath, I feel like, you know, that whole front, being a frontline person or whatever, you know, like it really does feel the amount that you're open. It doesn't even matter how closed off you think you can be or guarded. It's just kind of impossible to be guarded. So going into the school year, I was just trying to navigate how to like be guarded while also being a good teacher and maintaining my identity I have, which is fairly jovial, playful teacher. And just kind of navigating how to be real, you know?
Brooke Freund is a junior high teacher who lives in Iowa City. She's also the mother of a beautiful 9-month-old baby girl. This hour, we're talking about the challenges of becoming a mother during the pandemic. We will continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about becoming a mother in a pandemic. COVID-19 has added stress, fear, challenges, and danger to giving birth and caring for a young child. In a few minutes, we'll hear the story of a mother and baby who survived after nearly losing their lives to COVID-19, and Amber Goodrich, the director of the University of Iowa Hospital and Clinic's Midwifery Clinic, will be here. Right now, I'm talking with Brooke Freund. She gave birth to a beautiful baby girl last April. She's also a junior high teacher in Iowa City who teaches full-time face-to-face. And Brooke, before the break, we were talking about how challenging it is to protect yourself emotionally when teaching this year while still being emotionally available and invested in your students. Listening to you talk about that struggle takes me back to when I became a mom. I knew that I would love my baby more than anything else in the world, but I wasn't at all prepared for how unimportant all of the other things that I care so much about would seem by comparison. And I know that you are a passionate teacher and you've loved teaching, but in this first year of motherhood, is it hard to find that passion?
You know, it's not like yesterday we had this really wonderful discussion about the book we're reading right now. And in those moments where I really feel like I can be in charge of the train, you know, the symbolic train, you know, I feel like my passion comes through. Like, but I definitely agree with you. Like, it's just, especially as I run like the theater department and the plays were kind of have been put to a halt this year just because of COVID. But like, it is so difficult to care about everyone's feelings when when I have this person that I, you know, person that is the top of my mind every moment. And I am, it's so beautiful, but it also makes me really struggle with just straight up caring about little things. And that's such a blessing. And that's also kind of makes you say, God, will that ever come back?
You just started teaching full-time face-to-face. You've been teaching full-time face-to-face, but now all of your students are there, at least a good
Correct.
Percentage of them are because of the change
yeah.
that the state legislature made. How does that feel, knowing that you can't maintain social distance in all of your classes, although your students are supposed to be wearing masks and being careful?
Yeah.
How are you
yeah.
coping?
How am I coping? I am coping by focusing when I can on the little things that kids do that are really kind. I mean, they are the majority of who I interact with in the daytime. And I'm really coping by trying to just be sincere while also being professional with the students. You know, if I need a moment, just be quieter or more calm or take a breath. Give them some time to process. You know, I cope by just keep on keeping on. I sometimes I know that can be kind of a curse, but I feel like I cope by almost sometimes acting like nothing's going on or nothing's wrong, so kids just have some consistency, so I don't leave this huge hole for them to feel like something dismal is happening, but, you know, maintain some level of norm for them. When they feel consistent, when they feel safe, when they feel chill, I feel chill.
Brooke, thank you so much for talking with me, and take care, and I think it will get easier.
I do too. I really do. I think hope is all you have and all you need.
Brooke Freund is a junior high teacher who lives in Iowa City. She avoided COVID and gave birth to a beautiful and healthy baby girl last April as the pandemic was taking hold. Not all mothers have been as lucky. While pregnant women tend to be young and healthy, they are at greater risk of serious illness or even death from the virus than their peers. COVID-19 is also linked to a significantly higher chance of premature birth. Aquarius Bunch of Waterloo was a healthy 27-year-old working at an assisted living facility when she got COVID-19, and she was pregnant. Iowa Public Radio's Natalie Krebs prepared this report for Side Effects Media.
When Aquarius Bunch tested positive for COVID-19, she quarantined alone at home, hoping to ride out her fever and cough.
I was taking several baths and showers a day. I was checking my temperature. I was drinking tea. I was staying hydrated.
But Bunch never got better. Instead, she got sicker to the point where she went to the emergency room in Waterloo, a small town in eastern Iowa.
I really don't remember much. I just remember they were checking my temperature. They gave me some Tylenol. And I thought I was getting ready to go home. That's what I remember.
It was there Bunch's condition deteriorated fast. She had a seizure, and doctors decided she would need to be transferred to Iowa City, some 80 miles away.
And so they quickly contacted our team at the University of Iowa.
Sharon Beth Larson is a doctor at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She says there was something else to worry about.
To say we have a COVID-19 patient who has a periviable fetus. So this is a fetus at an age where it is not likely to survive outside the uterus.
Not only did Bunch have COVID-19, she was 6 months pregnant and her lungs were failing.
She was, at that point, not responsive. She was sedated. She was paralyzed. She was on the mechanical ventilator.
Larson, a heart surgeon, was called in because Bunch needed more than that ventilator to survive. Her organs still weren't getting enough oxygen, and so her only chance was a complex, invasive life support procedure known as ECMO. Larson says ECMO is used on just 1-2% of the sickest COVID-19 patients. It involves surgically attaching tubes and monitors to pump oxygen into the blood. This would give Bunch's lungs a chance to heal.
And then we can wean the support and let the patient continue to recover.
But odds were against Bunch. Larson says when COVID-19 patients get to the point where they're placed on ECMO therapy, less than half survive. Plus, there was the issue of the pregnancy. Larson says patients on ECMO nearly always undergo emergency deliveries.
There's bleeding complications. There's thrombotic or blood clot complications. So we were doing the very best we could in this very rare and unique situation.
Larson says during the hour that it took to do the procedure, the room was tense, filled with emotion. A maternal fetal medicine team monitored Bunch's baby the whole time, ready to deliver if necessary. But it wasn't, and Bunch made it through.
I remember waking up, and I was on Zoom with my family, and they were waving at me, smiling, and, you know, talking to me. And I just thought I was in a dream. I thought it was a dream.
Bunch and her lungs improved rapidly, so much so that a little over a week later, she was taken off of ECMO. The next day, her ventilator was removed. And just 2 weeks after Bunch arrived in Iowa City by air ambulance, she was sent home to Waterloo to her mother and three-year-old son.
It was actually on Mother's Day. I got to come home, so that was great. That was amazing. That worked out well.
Bunch says in the whirlwind of what happened, she never got to talk to Larson while in the ICU. She met her at a checkup appointment after leaving the hospital.
I felt very emotional because, you know, she saved my life. Like, it was just, I was so glad to be able to see her and express my feelings and emotions about how I felt.
And Larson says Bunch has been a source of inspiration during what she calls a dark and disturbing few months at the University Hospital battling COVID-19.
Maybe things will never be normal again in the hospital, but it just felt so good that we conquered this virus, that Aquarius conquered this virus that has taken out so many of our friends and family and loved ones and colleagues.
Bunch is now at home in Waterloo.
Iowa Public Radio's Natalie Krebs. That report first aired in July. Aquarius Bunch of Waterloo gave birth to a healthy baby girl in August. With us now is Amber Goodrich. She is a certified nurse midwife, the director of the midwifery clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She is also pregnant with her second child, so she has multiple perspectives on birth during a pandemic. Hello, Amber.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And I want to go back to a year ago, the beginning of the pandemic, when in March we shut things down and people were so frightened about what was going on, with good reason. Tell me what changed in the midwifery clinic and at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics for women who were delivering then.
Sure. So I think that there was definitely kind of some mass panic at the beginning and just so much unknown. I know even as a provider, I was getting emails daily about new recommendations because we just didn't know and still don't know a lot of the answers, which that uncertainty is hard for both us and our patients.
Yeah, well, and listening to Brooke talk about giving birth with a mask on, I mean, I'm sure that everything just dramatically shifted right away.
Right. It really did. And just not, you know, patients not being able to have their family members. We've at the university, we've always had our patients be able to have one support person, and they're able to have a doula as well, which is really helpful for them. But even so, like not getting to you know, have siblings meet postpartum. We were having patients leaving earlier instead of staying those traditional two nights after having a delivery too, in just hopes of getting back to kind of the safety net of their home.
How have things evolved over time? I mean, we have become a little more comfortable with knowing how to manage COVID-19 in a hospital situation. How are things working now?
So I think as far as like visitor restrictions go, they are really pretty similar. One thing that we started doing at the university that's been helpful for us is testing all of our moms who come in labor. And that's a good way of us being able to preserve some of our PPE, like the N95 masks and things like that. Like I said, we've still fortunately been able to have doulas involved as well as one partner for the birthing person. I think that there is still some uncertainty, especially around, you know, new findings with COVID, and of course still worry of contracting the disease, which has its own implications in pregnancy.
Right. And let's talk a little bit about that, because as I mentioned earlier, of course, the majority of women who are giving birth they tend to be young. They tend to be healthy. That this is that part of life. And so that puts them not in one of the very high risk categories for COVID-19, but they are more at risk than their peers. What do we know?
Yeah. So what we know is that if you become COVID positive while you're pregnant, the disease tends to be more severe, unfortunately. And with that, your chance of needing an ICU admission, your chance of needing intubation are higher. And so that's why we really encourage our mothers and our birthing people to take great care in the social distancing and mask wearing.
I also mentioned that there seems to be a correlation between COVID-19 and preterm birth. Tell me more about that.
Mm-hmm. So I think that that correlation is kind of an unfair one because, as somebody had mentioned earlier, if the mother is decompensating and not doing well medically, the decision may be made to deliver the baby. It's not that preterm labor happens, perhaps, but because the decision is made because the mom is sick. Does that make sense?
Right. So yes, it could be that somebody who has survived COVID might give birth earlier, but it also might be that someone who has COVID would be induced to protect the baby.
Correct. Right. Or need to have a C-section because, you know, in really severe cases, perhaps they're not, they're intubated and not able to undergo an induction.
Now, so much of what you do isn't, it's not just about labor and delivery. Of course, there's all that prenatal mm-hmm. care and postnatal care that goes along with having a baby.
Absolutely.
How has the pandemic affected prenatal care?
So as far as how the university goes, it definitely has affected it because before, a lot of times I felt like we would establish really great relationships with family members as well, spouses, partners, as well as our patients. But unfortunately, now they're not allowed to come to just routine prenatal visits. They can come here at the university. They can come to big ultrasounds. So like that first ultrasound they have in the first trimester and the 20-week scan. Initially when the pandemic first started, we were even doing some modified prenatal care, doing some telehealth visits even. We've kind of gone back to in-person, but I still think it creates some angst coming to a prenatal visit on your own.
Yeah. Well, and that's such a special time for a lot of people, too, an opportunity to really make mm-hmm. a partner feel involved and invested when
Absolutely.
They get to be there and listen to the heartbeat and all of those special things.
Right.
I have read mm-hmm. that fewer women are pregnant right now than normal, and people have been putting off plans to have another child or to have a child. Are you seeing that reflected mm-hmm. in your practice?
Gosh, I'm not. I have to tell you, we've been so busy. And, you know, right about now would be like your hashtag quarantine babies.
Yeah, right.
That would have been conceived like about the beginning of the pandemic. I can certainly see, I've had patients tell me like I'm worried about conceiving because of concern of COVID and pregnancy and all the implications with that. But I also think that people, you know, start to get a little bit impatient and we're like, well, how long is this going to really go on for? And we don't have the answer for that. And to continue to keep your family on hold is a lot to ask, you know.
Right. Well, and you are pregnant yourself, and this is your second
yeah.
child. I'm sure you probably had a plan for when that was going to happen. Did you think about that not happening right now?
I mean, we absolutely did. This is a planned pregnancy, but certainly we just were ready for another baby. Our son is almost 3 years old, and with kind of the vaccines being on the horizon, I was feeling more comfortable with it. And to be perfectly honest with you, I feel much safer in the hospital than I do like at the store, the grocery
Interesting.
Store.
I've actually heard a number of people say that, but tell me a little bit more about that. Why do you feel safer at the hospital?
I just really feel like the healthcare workers have an invested interest in keeping folks safe and mask wearing and social distancing. Certainly, my life has changed with Zoom calls instead of meetings that have been in person. Whereas if you go to the grocery store, well, especially now that the mask mandates are kind of being lifted a little bit, but people perhaps are not wearing a mask correctly, maybe not sanitizing. Like, it's just not as a controlled environment, I feel, than what the hospital is. The university's really stepped up to make it feel safe.
We are going to take a short break, and then we're going to hear from Aaliyah Quinn, who is one of the co-founders of the Supply Hive in Des Moines, about the work they're doing to support mothers of color and Black families during this time. She is also a young mother herself, so we'll have that conversation in a moment. And Amber, we'll be back to talk to you in a few minutes as well. Amber Goodrich is a certified nurse midwife and director of the Midwifery Clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. We're talking about what it's like to give birth, to become a mother, to parent a small child during a pandemic. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about pregnancy, giving birth, and parenting small children in this pandemic environment. Certified nurse midwife Amber Goodrich is still with us, and my next guest is a mother of a small child and has also been helping other mothers and moms-to-be during COVID. Aaliyah Quinn is one of the co-founders of the Supply Hive in Des Moines. Aaliyah, welcome to the show.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And you had your son in November of 2019, so he was still really tiny when the pandemic struck. How did that change your life as a new mom?
It was definitely challenging, and I was not prepared for this pandemic to happen. I mean, nobody was, yeah. But it was very challenging because he was a newborn, and germs was a scary thing for newborns, and it's a scary thing for mothers who are new mothers. They don't want their kids to get sick. So yeah. It was very challenging.
Well, and that support system that a new mother has around her, hopefully there's something of a support system. COVID really took a lot of that away. So was that mm-hmm. hard for you? Did you lose people who were helping you?
So I actually was a lucky person. My mother helps me a lot, and my fiance's mother does. But there was times where I was nervous with giving him off to one of them just because I know that they are being as safe as they can, but I know they have jobs and they have to go places, they have to go to the grocery store. So you just often think of that, like, hopefully they don't care if I'm not carrying anything or catch anything, but I also need that support because there's times where I need to go do something with the Supply Hive, or I need to work, or when I was in school, I needed time to focus on that. So it was very challenging because you just always worried, like, hopefully this person doesn't have COVID or this person's safe and healthy. So it was very challenging.
Has that support network, has everybody stayed healthy?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Thank God. We all have stayed healthy.
That's wonderful. And the Supply Hive, for people who aren't familiar with it, it started last summer, growing out of the Black Lives Matter movement. You started providing support to the protesters, but it has grown to be so much more than that. And one mm-hmm. of the things you did last summer was hold a celebration of Black motherhood. Tell me a little bit about that event.
Okay, so we had the celebration of Black motherhood. My son and I were actually the people on the flyer. That was me breastfeeding my son.
Nice.
So that was awesome to see that come to life. But so we first did a drive where we had people drop off baby supplies, mother supplies, anything that was like baby or mother related. And we had a ton of donations. It was crazy. Like, I literally kind of cried at the end of the night because I was like, wow, our community came together to get all these supplies out here for these mothers. And then we eventually had the celebration of Black motherhood, and we had it where we had food there, free food. We had resources, like we had the Young Women's Resource there. We had other like organizations and nonprofits there that support mothers and their babies. And we had a great time. We had raffle prizes, and mothers were able to come out. Even if you're not a mother, we were inviting fathers to come as well. Grandmothers, whoever is basically like a mother or a father to a child, was able to come out there, and they were able to grab free supplies like wipes and diapers. We had like maternity clothing. We had car seats we were giving away in the raffle, cribs, anything that you can think of that you would need for your baby to have everything they need to grow, and for the mothers. We also did like a raffle where we gave away like a free hotel for a weekend for the mothers. So if they want to go and get away and get a break, we had like gift cards to like food restaurants, anything like that. So we were thinking beyond just baby. We were thinking about mothers and how like they need that support after they have their children and how they need breaks sometimes. Or we also had resources for postpartum and breastfeeding as well.
Providing support to people gives you an opportunity to help with a need, but it also, I'm sure, helps you learn about needs. And mm-hmm. it also helps people understand that you're a person, you're an organization they can come to if they are in need. What's been happening since that celebration? Have you heard from a lot of moms or parents of young kids who do need help?
So actually we have. Right now we are working on a partnership with Des Moines Public Schools, and our goal is to reach out to more families to see what they need in the schools and see what they need. But specifically, we've been working with a lot of mothers or parents in general, guardians, who need like certain things. So we'll have like some random mothers or parents hit us up in our DMs, and they'll be like, oh, I need this for my child. And we'll make sure to reach out to our social media support systems and ask them like, oh, do you guys have this in this certain size? Or we'll even look in our inventory to see if we have those things to give to those parents.
Black moms have so many challenges in this environment. In any year without a pandemic, we know there's a higher level of maternal mortality for Black moms for a number of reasons having to do with systemic racism. But people of color have also been hit harder by COVID-19. Mm-hmm. This just makes what you're doing so essential right now. What do you want people who aren't a part of your community to understand about this need and how urgent it is?
It is very urgent. Like, it's just simple as just reaching out to us and asking us, what can you do to help? Because this is urgent. Like, Black mothers are going through a lot on top of having to deal with this whole pandemic and trying to figure out how to keep themselves and their children safe. We don't have a lot of resources in our community when it comes to the pandemic. It's more of like the outer mini cities and stuff. And so I just think it's important to just even just reach out and show your interest and support and see what you could do to help, whether it's donating monetary or donating some supplies, anything, because it's just very important because it does hit our community harder than it does other communities.
Your son is about 15 months old right now, which is the cutest stage for any child. How are things going?
It's great. He's growing very fast. Like, it's very fun to watch him grow. He's starting to say more words. He's doing a lot more. He's very busy, so he keeps me on my toes.
Well, that won't change.
It's very fun.
Oh, good. I'm glad things are going well. And please stay safe and stay healthy. Aaliyah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Aaliyah Quinn is one of the co-founders of the Supply Hive in Des Moines. We're talking about giving birth, becoming a parent, parenting a small child in the midst of this pandemic. And also with me is Amber Goodrich, certified nurse midwife. She is also the director of the midwifery clinic at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and she's expecting her second child. Amber, listening to Aaliyah, you know, we were talking about that support network that hopefully surrounds a new mother. And that's been one of the things that I've been worried about with the pandemic. What are you hearing from the pregnant women in your practice about the kind of support they are getting or might get or might not get because of the pandemic?
That's a good question. I definitely think, as somebody else had mentioned, that motherhood in general can be quite isolating. Motherhood in a pandemic is a new level of isolation, especially when you're just trying to balance between keeping your family and your new baby safe, but also your own mental health. I do think that there are ways that family members can still be present. I've heard of family members still coming to meet the new baby outside of the window, you know, even quarantining for a couple of weeks before coming to meet the new baby, masking and before meeting the baby. Something that I thought was really unique was even like paying for meals or cleaning services to help support the new mother.
The kind of things that you would normally be able to do yourself, to be able to make a meal and come over, or to cook in their kitchen and feed them and do the kinds of things that people normally do. Yeah, it's in my own family. I have a nephew who was born last April, and I still haven't met him, and that's so hard.
Oh,
and
it's
really
so hard.
But you know, I know that certainly I'm far from being alone in that. A lot of families are in that situation where grandparents haven't gotten to really spend time with their grandkids and things like that. And that must that just must be a source of grief for new parents.
Oh, absolutely, because it's such a fragile time. Like, you don't get the time back, you know? And something I do encourage mothers to, and, you know, parenting individuals to reach out to their providers if they are experiencing any concerns with their mental health, because, like I said, motherhood in general has its own trials, but doing it, although you're not alone because you have people virtually, it's just not the same.
Right. Right. Well, and do you have some advice? I mean, you mentioned the idea of just buying food and getting it sent over to the house. Do you have advice for people who are in that frustrated support network, the people that really want to help these new moms, but just can't physically be there?
Truly, something that my in-laws did for us, because I'm due May 5th, they just told us that they're going to hire a cleaning lady for us for the first few months the baby's here. And I feel like that is going to be such a huge weight off of my shoulders to try to pick up after my toddler and still recover myself.
Well, and I can imagine that some people would feel nervous about that, having someone come in to clean. So how will you manage that risk?
I think that by just choosing somebody that I trust, you know, and using that I know is using safe practices and like masking while they're in my home and things like that. I think it's just a fine balance between what is the risk and what and how is your mental health.
Right.
Well,
Let's talk a little bit about mental health, because you mentioned earlier that new motherhood can be a very isolating time for people. And of course, we know about postpartum depression, which, you know, is something that a lot of moms deal with. And I can imagine could be exacerbated by the isolation of the pandemic. What are your concerns about that isolation? You already mentioned earlier how important it is for pregnant women to mask and social distance and just be incredibly careful. And that can feel very lonely.
Right. Absolutely. I think still trying, even though you can't physically be with people, still trying to stay in touch, even though I know we're all exhausted by one more Zoom meeting these days, but even like being able to get that support virtually, I think is helpful for women. I know we also have programs through the university to help with some of that are also telehealth programs, so they don't even have to leave their home and drag their baby out or anything in the midst of things. I think when the weather starts warming up, I know we're having this 40-degree Iowa heat wave, which feels great. I encourage moms to even get out and go for a walk, you know, be outdoors and do something for yourself.
Let's talk about vaccination, because of course, that is bringing all of us so much hope. I want to start first with your decision, because you are a healthcare provider, which makes you qualified for a vaccine. Some pregnant women are nervous about getting vaccinated. What has your choice been?
Yeah, so I just kind of want to preface by saying that it's a very personal decision that us as healthcare providers are supporting you no matter what you decide. But my personal decision was to go ahead and get the vaccine. And why I chose to do that is because I take care of COVID-positive patients at work. And while I am provided PPE, you know, things are not always perfect. And I have also taken care of really sick moms with COVID-19. And I, you know, for me, researching the background of the vaccine, it is theoretically, the science behind it is reassuring. The animal data behind it is very reassuring. What we do know is that the long-term implications of COVID-19 can be potentially deadly. And it was just, since my risk of contracting COVID was high, the risk of the vaccine didn't seem as high to me. So I chose.
You made that decision and you are fully vaccinated and it went well from, yes, from your perspective?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a sore arm, but it wasn't, honestly, my flu shot hurt worse this year. I took a whole weekend off, like assuming that I would be down and out, and I really felt good.
Great. So, that's so good. And it must feel like, yeah, just such a reassuring thing to know that you've had the vaccine moving forward.
It is. It is. And, you know, we're still very careful with mask wearing and social distancing to be safe, because we really don't know, is this going to make me an asymptomatic carrier, or is this just, am I truly not going to have it because my husband works from home, so he is not eligible for the vaccine. Of course, our son isn't either. So,
a lot of prospective grandparents are eligible for the vaccine. And so, yes, as things move on, hopefully this gets a lot more babies into their grandparents' arms too.
Yes, yes. Both my mom was vaccinated. She's a teacher. My husband's parents are vaccinated now, and so are my grandparents. So it's like, here comes the sun. I can feel it.
That's wonderful. So if you had just one word of wisdom to leave any pregnant women or people who have a pregnant woman in their family with right now, I mean, we do have hope on the horizon, but COVID-19 is still very present. It is spreading rapidly through community spread in Iowa. We know that. So any words of wisdom to leave people with today?
I would say for words of wisdom would just be, although you feel isolated, know that you're not alone. I know for one, your healthcare providers are here for you. And also for individuals who are family members of pregnant women, please continue to reach out with them, because even the simple text can make a big difference.
And respect their safety and boundaries as well. I'm sure that yes, that's very, gosh, very important. Amber, thank you
that is
so much for being here today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Amber Goodrich is a certified nurse midwife. She's also the director of the midwifery clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and she is expecting her second child in May. This hour, we've been talking about what it's like to give birth, to become a parent or parent a small child in the midst of this pandemic. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Caitlin Harrop, Dennis Reese, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.
The way Iowans consume news has changed a lot since the coronavirus pandemic hit in 2020. But people here still need to know what's going on in the state every day. What are leaders saying?
The virus isn't going away until we have a vaccine.
How are medical professionals reacting, and how is it affecting hospital staff and schools?
Those weekends where you are on the phone and sending emails and, you know, dealing with people with a very emotional issue has been really hard.
I'm Clay Masters. In 2021, Iowa Public Radio is starting a podcast called Hear First. It's a quick daily show for your work week that catches you up on state news as you begin your day. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters.
Most of the improvement in the unemployment picture comes from more than 90,000 Iowans no longer looking for work.
Find out when high-profile politicians are in the state.
Back at the state fair!
Learn about what's going on in state government and discover Iowans you might not hear about otherwise.
This is the first time I've spoken with a woman without documents who's also unafraid of sharing her story on the radio.
Subscribe to Iowa Public Radio's Hear First wherever you get your podcasts.